of national debate. Our inability, apparently, to discuss, to disagree, and to decide. And I'm sure a number of you will have seen or heard the abuse MP Anna Soubry suffered at Westminster last week, along with the journalists Kay Burley and Owen Jones. Now, we might expect that within the councils of the church, things were better. But sadly, it's been true that within Church of England synods, and particularly at General Synod, for many years, people have talked across each other and at each other. Statements have been made. And those seeking to raise serious questions have been shouted down. And I've had friends, both where I was in Chancellor before and recently, last summer, Angus Maclean, General Synod, who have been mocked for opening their Bibles. Mocked for opening your Bible in a church council? That seems a bit bizarre, doesn't it? But these days, be it within or without the church, we find it very difficult to listen to those who disagree with us. We tend to unfriend or write off or hit back far too viciously on social media towards them. We become more entrenched in our views, more confirmed in them, more divided from one another and less able to communicate. We can't find common ground. We can't begin to understand. So it's no surprise we can't agree. We might wonder, why on earth is it that our minds are so closed? Why do we struggle to hear the contrary view? Why do we seem so poor at discerning what is best for us? Well, I think Solomon and the other authors of Proverbs and the wisdom literature would say to us that it's because we haven't sat at the feet of wisdom. We haven't been prepared to listen to her voice. We haven't been prepared to learn from her the discernment that we need, the practical common sense that she provides, and which through her we will be able to engage properly with the world around us. Now, we heard last time that these Old Testament writers can only get us so far. But in the Gospels, we meet the one whose wisdom is greater than the wisdom of Solomon. And as we heard from Paul in 1 Corinthians last week, let's have that slide up, Phil, please. It is Jesus who is the power of God and the wisdom of God. It is Jesus who is our wisdom, our righteousness, our sanctification, and our redemption. So you see, if we would live wisely in God's world, if we would get the best out of life in God's world, then we must live by wisdom. We must live by the words of Jesus. We must live in the power of Jesus. We must live by his life and his death. And the good news is that this wisdom is available for absolutely everybody, for anyone who wants it. And that brings us to our first heading tonight, Wisdom Cries Out. Hopefully you've got a note sheet so you can see the headings, you can follow through where we're going to go tonight. Thanks, Phil. We'll come back to that a bit later. So the first thing we see is that wisdom cries out. Verse 20, wisdom cries aloud in the street. In the market she raises her voice. At the head of the noisy street she cries out. At the entrance of the city gates she speaks. God's revelation of himself is public news. It's fit for everywhere. Now last time, you may remember, we saw how wisdom was to be gained within the household, within the church family, from father and mother. Tonight we get a slightly different picture. We see that wisdom is out there, making herself known, calling people to hear and to follow. And Solomon paints this picture of the hustle and bustle of busy streets. People going about their business, selling their wares in the markets, doing legal stuff at the city gates. So if that was true in Solomon's day, if that was the society to which Proverbs was written, we've got to ask the question, where do we find wisdom today? Where do we hear wisdom in that sense today? Well, while our first instinct may be to say, well, within the nation, well, that can't be true, can it? Because the nation we're looking at here is the nation of Israel. And today, that equivalent is, of course, the church. The voice of God, the words of God, the wisdom of God will be heard among the people of God. But sadly, that's not always the case. Chatting to somebody a little earlier tonight, they said they've been amazed going to churches where the Bible has never been opened. And that is all too often the case. But we thank God for faithful congregations committed to the Bible, for Bible readings in our meetings and our gatherings, for an opportunity to confess, to remember the Lord's death around his table, as we will tonight. And then sometimes, to a certain extent, for church buildings themselves, which are sort of testimonies in stone to the good news that those who built them trusted in. And of course, wider society engages with those words at baptisms, at funerals, at weddings, and obviously recently, as we've seen, at Christmas. And of course, God in his mercy will provide us with those daily reminders of mortality, daily reminders of the wonders of creation. I can think of somebody who was sort of set on the road to faith by words he heard at a funeral. A friend of mine from school days came from an atheistic family, but he stood on a mountain in Switzerland one holiday and just was convinced there had to be a creator. So in so many ways, God will draw us towards him. He'll nudge us in the right direction. These things in of themselves aren't the gospel, but they can lead us to the gospel, prepare us for hearing more. And that is the invitation of wisdom. And it's for everybody, regardless of education or birth. It's not just for the top table, not just for the elite. It's for everyone. If you glance across to 2:6, you'll remember, as we saw last time, it comes by revelation, for the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. Now, here at the end of chapter 1, God's mercy and generosity are expressed as extending to three groups in particular: the simple, the scoffers, and the fools. And